As always, subscribe and click the notification bell on our YouTube channel. Be active on our Facebook group, East Coast Distressed Note Investing, and be sure to go to our website for all your note investing tools, resources, and available assets. If you have any questions, email us at tradedesk@jkpholdings.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Dave Putsch from JKP Holdings. Alongside me, as always, Mr. Nathan Turner. How are you?
Oh, hello, doing well.
Cool, man. Well, I'm glad we connected for a few minutes today. Before we bring our special guest on, which I think a lot of people are excited about, we kind of want to just catch up with a few people. We're a real estate note investing show. This has to do with creating, buying, and raising capital, right? And I think for us, we've done a lot of stuff with real estate, from being landlords to being creative financing people to buying notes, creating notes, selling notes, been on stage and whatnot. But I think for me, some of our hurdles we get through are caused by ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. We're talking off air with our guest before we get him in here. What's your thoughts about that and how you been? I apologize. We're rushing through it.
No, not at all. No, it's been good. It's been good. Kids are off this week from school, so everyone's home. And so that's extra fun.
Oh, what's it, a holiday up there? Or?
It's just February break. I don't know. They get a week off in February, another week off in April. And so
Oh my Lord.
That's pretty nice. But no, it's been good.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we're talking about raising capital today, and I'm in the middle of that now. And the truth is, especially in notes, especially when you're talking about notes, it's a cash business.
Yes.
Like you're not going to get it from a bank. And so you've got to know how to do this outside of a bank.
Yes.
And cash is king. You have to have cash to do this. It's not, you can't borrow money from a bank to do this. So,
yeah.
So it's an important topic. So I'm glad we've got our guest here today and we can talk about that. And I'm excited to learn some stuff because I'm raising capital myself right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think for us, we often, you know, get stuck in our worlds, right? And we need to really keep networking with each other, realize that we're all here to help each other out. But we also seem to forget about the little things of what the people we're talking to may feel like, either if they're experienced investors or not experienced investors, or if they're young or if they're older, that their mindset is totally different from what we may be in. We may be in an active buying mode where others may not feel that way. And I think that on the flip side, we get struggled with, like, do we really raise money at 7%, 8%, 10%? How do we manage that? How do we manage that expectation and being real with people? And then what we ultimately want is really living our best life through real estate investing.
Absolutely. And I can't tell you how long we debated, my wife and I, on how much we were going to pay our investors. And are we going to do just a straight pref, or are we going to do a pref plus something? And we kind of went around and around for a few months, really, just batting it back and forth and trying to decide what was the right number, or what was the right structure. And in the end, you know, it really goes back to, it was actually a conversation with Kimberly Banks Fawcett back in the day. And she said, she said, you know, go from a different perspective and find out who's your investor.
Yes.
What's your investor avatar? Who are you looking for? And go from it from that perspective.
Mm.
And that changed everything for us. And that's where we settled on where we are today with it, just a straight pref. And part of it also is, you know, we've done this for a few years now, and really look at the numbers. What can you actually do? Don't overpromise. Oh my goodness, you can get yourself into so much trouble. I've seen it happen to some other people, and it's really sad because it's a great concept they've got, it's a great idea, and they may even have experience. But if they're overpromising, you as the operator, you have to make money. Otherwise, it's not worth it for anybody. So it's paramount that you go into it with realistic, real numbers. You know exactly what you can and cannot do. That's a big deal. Anyway, yeah. We'll get into all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Too. Yeah. I totally agree with you. You know, when we first got started in the real estate space, I didn't think anyone would actually give me their money.
Yeah.
Why would anyone? I'm not a stockbroker. I'm not a XYZ person. I think that we find it very hard to believe anyone would trust us to do what we do. And now looking back at it, I can understand that fear.
Yeah.
Right. I can understand that concern, the fears and worries with all that. But I think for me, making sure that people trust, respect, and know what's going on before it happens. Right. If you're raising a dollar or billions of dollars, it's still that trust and respect that you have to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? And so much of that comes with the track record and just doing what you say you're going to do. And that, man, that's such an important piece of it. And just.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do right.
So before we tune into our special guest, which I'm really excited for, and I know a lot of people are, we want to make sure that people know that the DME tickets for Nashville are for sale. That's a conference
officially
for
live.
Note creation creators, as well as note buyers. It'll be down in Nashville at the end of May. Awesome experience. It won't be just note buyers. It won't be just note creators. We're bridging together and marrying the two and making things happen.
Yeah. Super excited. I was just talking to some guys that are creating notes just over the last couple of days. And, you know, again, what we've seen over this last year, year and a half, where there's so many of these note creators that don't know that there's an outlet. And so we're going, no, absolutely. 100%. We want to buy your notes. Let's figure out how to make them the most valuable that we can for you. And the best kind of notes that we can buy. So we're excited to bring all that together and have everyone come together.
I'm also putting in the chat for everyone there that Dan Deppen had nicely introduced me on a call that he'll be having shortly. It's a live note investing kind of course.
Okay.
What we'll be talking. So the link should be in the chat. Hopefully everyone got it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out and take a look at it. Cool.
Hey, well, Dave, I don't mean to interrupt you, but
let's bring them in.
Text. They can. People can't see us. I don't know where you're going to, but the ad that you sent out.
Yeah.
She's trying to get on and she said she can't see anything. So,
well, if she's on Facebook, there's on the top of the event page, there should be a video at the top. Have them click on the video. He's figuring out the technology part. So on the top of the event page, if you are there, or if obviously if you can't see it, to have them go to the event page.
She's got it. Done.
Right. So, Steve.
Yes.
It is awesome to see you, my man. It's always a pleasure speaking to you. I think that I can't say it enough. You are one of the most respected guys in the space that even from the first time you meet you, it's been awesome. So thank you very much coming on our show and spending some time with us of your wealth of knowledge and experience.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on here. Usually I get, when people first meet me, they don't like me. because I am definitely tough. I am to the point. I avoid all the bullshit that comes out of people's mouth. I can read people well. I can tell you how much real estate they own, what they're doing, and if they're doing good or not.
Yeah.
And I usually lay into them pretty hard, but I can't tell you how many times, you know, after I talked to people five or six times, they've told me, man, you were really tough in the beginning. I really didn't like you too much. But now we kind of starting to love you. So I kind of like being tough because it is what it is, man. There's just no bullshit around owning companies and business and trying to succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, understanding what that looks like, right, is someone who's legit, who wants to do it, wants to get things done, and doesn't let others control them, which is awesome. Steve, how did you get involved in real estate, my man? Give a little quick story about your background, which is always cool.
So background, going back to my early 20s, I started working at a pizza shop when I was 10 at 20. I ended up buying the pizza shop, did that, worked my butt off. I was actually a union truck driver. And I did all that until 36 years old. And I'm sure you guys all know Dave Van Horn. We were really close. He was trying to get me to buy properties for years. He was a real estate agent back then, 20 years ago. And, he finally took me to a meeting down in Wilmington, Delaware, and completely came out of that meeting. Within 3 months, I sold my pizza shop. I was having a house built. I was a Teamster. When the house was completed, I quit that job and went full time into real estate with no income coming in. I did save a fair amount of money that gave me a little bit of cushion, but those cushions went up and down for years to come. And Dave forgot to tell me I was going to need a big bottle of Advil. But look, the journey for me was just a consistent journey of getting into the single family houses in the beginning. And you know, one thing that just kind of blew my mind after I owned about 9 properties, I was sitting there one night and I'll never, ever forget it. And I was sitting there and I'm like, husband and wife are renting to me, had about 9 properties. So that's 18 people that are going to get up for me the next morning and go to work and pay for my debt.
Wow.
And man, that just stuck with me so hard. And was so inspiring. And I've never forgotten that moment. I have 18 people that I don't know, they're going to get up and write me checks to pay for my properties, but then pay down my debt. And today I think I have about, I couldn't even, probably 6,000 to 7,000 people that get up and go to work for me and pay down my debt.
Yeah.
So if that doesn't get you going to own real estate, I don't know what else can get you going, but that was very influential night for me.
What types of things have you got involved with? Have you done only single families? What other areas have you only done landlording? What have you done in the real estate?
No, I think in this business, you have to learn to adapt. I call it adapt or die. So, you know, I think going back, 10 or 11 years, when I was into, the single families, then the world of the note business came on, came about. And, I used to be a part of PPR where Dave was and, decided to go out on my own and own Stone Bay Holdings now with my my partner, Kerry Fakes. So, I went into the non-performing note world, but we went into it a different way. You know, everybody was buying non-performing notes and I didn't want to do the work. So there was a lot of work in doing that. So I had this idea and believe me, no college education. I just always try to think what's rational, what's easy for me, what works for me and the things that I don't want to do. So when you guys were all buying these non-performing notes, everybody wanted to sell their gold.
Yeah.
And the gold was to, to buy these notes, get them to perform. But I was thinking, why is everyone selling their re-performing notes? Because now they're paying, right? And I just started buying them from everybody. And I bought millions of dollars of re-performing notes. And then I actually put a clause in there that they had to guarantee that payment for at least a year.
Wow.
Because when you used to get those notes reperforming, 4 or 5 months, if the workout wasn't done correctly, then they could go back into default. And I wanted to have help from the person that was communicating with that person. But, that was just creating a win-win situation in a bad time for a lot of people's lives back 13, 14 years ago. And then I, got into the performers. I was at Temple University. We were actually doing a lot of student housing then. And then, not sure if you guys know Brian Adams. There was a couple other guys that started approaching me because I started to slow down in the business.
Okay.
And, I was raising capital, had a private placement memorandum. If any, if we're going to talk about a little bit of raising capital here, I think everybody should have a securities attorney. If you're going to get into raising capital, you absolutely have to know the rules of the game. And that starts with an amazing securities attorney because they know the laws. They know what you can do and what you can say and what you can't say. So that was a key part. But, what really you know, because you know, if I went back years ago, I was raising capital, but now I'm actually, I do a lot of lending myself, for people that are doing deals. But that transformed into a couple guys started calling me, about apartment buildings because they were raising capital. I was raising capital. I got to the point where I didn't have any places to, I kind of had to stop for a little bit because I didn't have enough places to deploy it. But the apartment buildings, you know, when Brian Adams came to me and said, hey, look, you know, we got this building down in Georgia. We need to raise $10 million. We actually split the deal. Another partner came in. We raised the capital. Brian Adams ran the deal. And I actually didn't have to do anything after I did my part. And that apartment building actually changed my life. So, you know, today I actually do a lot of private lending. I still own a lot of reperforming notes. We buy mobile home parks and apartment buildings. So that's what I'm, that's the core of what we're doing today. So, you know, don't always think you have to do, deal with the same thing all the time for years and years. You have to learn. I learned how to learn how to adapt to my business. I always had to see what like the next thing that was coming. And, you know, one of the things we did in the apartment buildings where we were buying the irregular apartment buildings that you see, but we actually to, you know, regular household tenants, we actually 2 years ago, we switched to student housing. So today I own one on the University of South Carolina, the one on the University of South Florida and Texas State University. So we made that transformation to go to the student housing part. Because, you know, when things start getting hot, people see apartment buildings got really fueled about 3-4 years ago. We had to adapt because we were going into apartment buildings 3-4 years ago where there was only 20, 25 people bidding on it. And then all these apartment building gurus come out there, start doing all these seminars. Yep. Everyone flocks to them. They think it's easier. It's all hard, man. Whatever you're into, it's all hard. Nothing's easy. So we had to get out of the space because that space was being run up, in price. And, you know, there was 50, 60, 100 people building, bidding on one apartment building. But now look, it's turned again because of the, higher interest rates. You know, now most of those people are falling off and a lot of people are going to default because they went into the higher interest rates, variable loans, which we don't get into.
Right. So you raise money at a young age, right? I think your ambition to do that is not in everybody. Do you disagree with that? You think everyone can raise funds, raise capital?
Well, it's what you, it's what, you know, what is your plan? What are you going to do with the money? You know, I heard you guys talking a little bit earlier, you know, off air, you know, everything is disclosure. In when you're raising capital, when I sit with people, when you talk about rates of returns, I think it's, you know, the people that get into it in the beginning, they think by they're going to lure people in by giving a higher rate return. You know, I just, you know, I think that's a demon because that can cause a lot of problems. You have to know when you're raising capital, what rate of return with the assets that you're buying works for your model. That model might be for you 6%, 8%, 10%. Look, I know a lot of people in the note business were raising capital at a higher rate because there was more juice, meat on the bones, right? But into that, those notes came way down. And if you were paying 12, 13%, probably getting your ass kicked. Yeah. So when people come to me and they approach about giving me money and investing with me, I actually basically, I interview them today. I go, you know, what are you looking for? What's your time horizon? Are you using your IRA? Are you using your self-directed IRA? Because if they go into these high rate of returns, the fantasy, I just go, look, I'm just not for you. But, and then it goes into age categories, right? I don't even, when I'm in the middle of raising capital, or if I am at that, you know, if I'm in a period where I'm raising, I don't really talk to 30, 40 year olds. Because they're looking to make the hire, the kill. They're not looking for the consistent return. They're really looking to get rich quick and make a big return on their capital.
Do you think that's a right mentality for a 30 or 40 year old looking back now?
No, I think, you know, I always tell everybody when I mentor people in their 20s and 30s, look for a consistent return over a long period of time because they don't understand compound interest. When you lose money, man, there's a long way back from that loss. But if you take consistent returns, and I look for investors that want fair exchange. My life is about fair exchange. I want my investors to wholeheartedly want us to succeed for a long period of time. And I look for the investor that wants that. It's a fair exchange from us to them on wanting us both to succeed and have that journey for a long period of time. And that's about consistent returns and compounding and educating them. So it's really, I think anybody, if they, you do something enough times, you have enough conversations, you can raise capital if you want to, but then there's a lot to go in that. Securities attorney, how long you're going to keep their money, how you're going to pay them back. It's real easy to take people's money, but I don't take people's money, but I have to have the exit strategy when I'm going to pay them, how I'm going to pay them back. You know, a lot of these people out there, I see they take the money, but they really don't have the exit strategy of when they're going to pay the person back. And that day will come. So, for us, when I'm doing it, we take them for a term. It could be a 3-4 year term, but then I'm calling them actually a year before and go, hey, I do other things before, but at that end, I'll call them 9 months to a year before and ask them, when do you think you're going to want your back? Your term is up in 9 months to a year. Do you think you're going to want your money back, or do you think you're going to want to extend? Now, when I get to that 6 month point, they got to give me an answer, because I have to plan for that. I can't wait a month before their term's up and then tell me that they're going to need their money back or they want to reinvest, because I got to make sure I have things for them to reinvest in.
Gotcha.
And it takes time to turn things around. You can't, whether it's a property, whether it's a note, I need my money next week. Well,
yeah. So this is kind of funny. Actually, me and Kerry found this. We found my flip chart. And when I started out, it was really, you can tell somebody verbally about anything, but they really don't get it until they see it. Right.
Yeah, true.
So, and I used to go around and sit with people, but I would literally have a 10-page little book. Right. And I would just flip it and I would take them through, okay, this is kind of when I was at Temple. This property is going to cost me $225. The rehab is going to be $125. If I take your money and pay you a rate of return, I'm going to end up here and we'll be at 75% loan to value, right? Mm-hmm. Because then when I'm done my rehab, talk about rehab and properties, when I'm done the rehab, I'm going to be all in for, it was 330. It was actually when I was doing duplexes at Temple. It was all in it. I didn't want to be over 337.5 because I created equity. I never have bought equity. So when I would do that refi with the commercial bank, I knew my property would have to appraise for 450 grand. It's crazy how I remember this. So if I was buying that duplex and doing that rehab or build, I knew I could go over, but I knew my goal was to be at 337.5 because if you do the math, I would need an appraisal at 450. Then I could go to a commercial bank after I had my tenants and the cosigners of the parents. I know that 75% of 450 is 337.5.
So let's go back a minute.
And then I'd be into the deal with no money out of my pocket.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Let's go back. Your first fund you created, right? Without getting too in the weeds, were you nervous? Were you excited? Were you forced into it? Were you just stuck? What happened there, that first fund? I think I met you probably 2013. We were at a conference in Jersey. I think you're raising $5 or $8 million. That was one of your first, I believe. And you
actually, when I went, I hired a securities attorney. His name's Craig Cipetti. Mm-hmm. He's out of New Jersey.
Yep.
And we just had long conversations over about a 2 or 3 month period of how the structure would be, writing the private placement, all your disclosures, risk factors, educating them about what I've done, where I've come from, how much business I've done, how many flips I've done. Mm-hmm. We were actually doing it to buy notes. No, because I think when you do the beginning process, which can't be all right, let's just go raise money. I think that would have been fearful, but I felt pretty good about, once we started taking money, it's pretty incredible. We were, it started with me raising capital, and then we were helping another company out, we were investing in their private, and they were actually already paying us a rate of return when I gave them money. So we were instantly profitable in the first month. So it all comes down, you know, fear will limit everything. You know, we talked about fear earlier. It's more, I'm fearful of not succeeding if I don't do the things I'm doing. I'm not fearful of doing the things that I'm doing. I'm fearful of not creating success for me and my investors. But no, we had a really, if you have a really good solid plan of who you're raising capital from, you have your private placement, you have your securities attorney, you have the plan of what you're going to do with their money, I think it makes it easier. Right. So it's almost like doing a mock raise or a mock raise into a mock investment and knowing all of the things that could go wrong. When people come to me for money, all they do is tell me this is what's going to go right. And this, we're going to kick ass. Be amazing. I'm like, all right, well, tell me what's going to be not amazing if this works out, if interest rates go up. If your project gets delayed. I want to know all these things. You know, it's just about to be logical what you're investing in, because a lot of people come to me for capital to do ground up construction. And I just really don't want to do it anymore, because the process, I can't tell you, out of 10 people that I've helped do that, it's always extended out a year. The project never gets done on time.
Have you ever gotten raw land? That's a big one right now. I've seen a lot of. Have you ever?
Yeah, we're hearing a lot about that these days.
Raw land.
I have it. I have to admit that I think I'm a badass, but I'm not a badass in development. I'm going through that process right now.
Yeah.
I'm going through that process right now where I have a property on Siesta Key, which I should actually knock it down and rebuild it. This is a good point. So I have this amazing property on Siesta Key, and it's from 1950, and it does about $400,000 a year in revenue. It kicks ass.
Awesome.
But the play here really is, and I'm going to sell it soon. I've made that decision. But the real play is to knock it down and rebuild luxury penthouse condos on the property, because I got a 12,000 square foot lot. But I'm not a builder. So I'm not going to do it. You know, I want to do it. I think I'm Mr. Badass. I've accomplished everything so far that I've wanted to. I got more goals. I got more accomplishments.
Yes, to me.
But I'm not a builder, and that process can be painful. And I called a couple builder friends, and they're saying, like, Steve, you are not a builder. You got to go hire a builder. You got to go through that process. You're not going to sleep at night. Sell the property and let someone else do what they're good at. Yeah. And that's what I think me and Perry have done a tremendous job in building our company is.
Sure.
We don't try to do everything. We created a company where we put people in place. We have strategic partners that we do a lot of business with, and we share in the assets. Sometimes we do part equity deals. Sometimes I just lend them money to do the deal. So I don't try to do things that I'm not good at. I do the things that I'm really good at.
What would you say? I know a lot of people always ask, like, you know, raising capital seems like a nice, fun thing to do. And a lot of people get stuck finding the person, right? It seems to me is that, you know, you're not looking, right? But where would you say when you first got started, were you going to find someone to get capital from? Were you live events, talking to RIAs, or was there something different that you just took a different angle? Because you're not the typical cup of tea out there that does things that everyone else does.
Yeah, look, you start out with friends, family, people you know. If those people won't lend you money, you're screwed. So look, the first person that lent me money was my best friend. He lent me $35,000. And then it led to his neighbor. And then it just led to people that had confidence in me to take their money and do the right thing with it. You know, that's how it started out with me. And you've never, ever seen me in an event raising capital in front of people that I don't know. I just think it's more of a challenge. Our is more referral based. I never go to people that I don't know or I just meet to try to raise capital. It starts out with people that you know. I think by giving them the plan, the structure of what you're doing, I think that's key. getting, you know, I said taking their money, then the most important back, educating them how they're going to get their money back. But no, I just believe it's too much work to go to people that you don't know. I think it's, you know, I would bring in an investor that I knew 3 months later. I would call them. Am I doing everything I'm supposed to do? I was really big in network marketing. So I learned this when if I've had Harry that lent me so much money after 3 months, 6 months, I'd go back to Harry and I go, Harry, I could really appreciate it. Put me in front of three people that might want to invest with me like you have.
Yeah.
Because they're your best marketing people or your current investors. Yeah. So once you get a couple and they go, look, they're busy people. You know, I say three people to them, kind of work like network marketing. I went to Harry and go, put me in front of three people or ask three people they might want to invest in. You give them your experience that you have with me. Gotcha. And he'd bring me back one person. He wouldn't bring me three.
So just a reminder for everyone, this is recorded. Yes, there'll be our podcast as well as our YouTube channels that are available. We had a couple quick questions. One came from a different source where do you ever go to an event? I know you, I don't think you're a big golfer, but if you were going to a sporting event, do you ever bring up the fact that what your job is, what you do, deal flow? Because I remember when we first met, you said, what's my job? I raise capital. That's my job.
Yeah. Well, I think a big mistake is we get diarrhea mouth of telling people how awesome we are in real estate. We talk about our real estate properties. You talk about what your needs are. So I might bring up my business, but I talk about what my needs are. So I used to tell people, when the downturn, I was like, man, you brought up being a real estate investor. People were just laughing at you that you got your ass kicked 14 years ago. Yeah. So, I mean, when I would go out and talk to people, I didn't even bring up that I was doing real estate. I would bring up that I raised capital and I would bring up self-directed IRAs. I mean, that was really cool when I walked into a restaurant or a bar setting and I go, hey, what do you do for a living? Right. The classic setup. Hey, what do you do for a living? Hey, I'm a plumber. Oh, what do you do for a living? And I wouldn't say I did real estate. I said I raise capital for a living. And I teach people how to use self-directed IRAs.
Boom.
That second part of that was amazing because people still don't understand self-directed IRAs. But then I got them asking me questions instead of me asking them for anything. And I'd be like, you never heard of self-directed IRAs? And I would kind of like mess with them that make them feel like a tiny bit of a fool, not crush them. But I can get away with that with my personality. And they would just want to learn more. And I would say, hey, you know, let's talk and I'll start teaching you self-directed IRAs. You just don't have to be in equities. there's a great opportunity to move to self-directive IRAs. And you can basically invest in a bunch of different things, not only real estate, but companies and different types of assets. So that was a big game changer for me.
So Jordan on Facebook asked, where do you source the deals you buy? Where do you get your sources?
All right. So I am really different, unfortunately. Since I have a private placement memorandum and I do raise capital, I actually call them strategic partners. So I help my these strategic partners fund their deals. So I have three apartment building guys that go out and look for apartment buildings. They've been masters at this. All three of them have been doing it for over 20 years. So remember I said, do everything that you're good at and stay focused. I don't want to go look and evaluate apartment buildings because that's a hell of a job to get involved in. But I am good at raising capital. So I had this idea when I started doing this going back about 6 years ago. My three strategic partners in the apartment building world, they go find the deals and then they bring them back to me and we decide which ones we're going to buy and which ones I'm going to fund and how much they're going to fund and I'm going to fund. And then I have like six or seven people that I fund all their rehab deals.
Okay.
So, you know, look, everyone goes, I'm hearing this right now. There's not deals out there. There's nothing to buy. It's always all bullshit. It's all in your mind that you stop putting an effort into looking for deals because you hear it from somebody else.
Sure.
Right. And that gets in your mindset that nothing's going on. You know, look, I have strategic partners up in Pennsylvania. I have a strategic partner in Chicago, a strategic partner in Jersey, and they're struggling to find deals. They are, but you know, down here in Florida, there's actually still plenty of deals to find. So it's just always pressing ahead and not getting the mindset that's nothing available. I love when people say, you know, that there's nothing to buy. It's just, you're not working hard enough. It's called grit too. So if I'm a big Tony Robbins guy, you know, when things slow down and uncertainty's going on, that's when you should be looking at your inside office, your employees, who you're dealing with, what you're working with, your structures, things that you need to change. Because, you know, I feel like we're in a little type of winter right now. We are. I am still doing a couple deals, but I'm planning for what I see coming in the apartment building world coming up at the end of this year and the beginning of next year.
That's awesome.
So, and look, if you want to raise capital, look, you absolutely have to master self-directed IRAs.
I was about to go there, shift there. I know I'm going to get you on fire with it. So tell us why self-directed IRAs, what options are there, and what are your thoughts if you're back to being 30 or 40 or 50? What would you be doing with your money? And why do you love self-directed so much? I know why, but go ahead.
50% of the capital I raise is from self-directed IRAs. And when you raise the money from a 50-year-old with their IRA money, they're not going to probably use that money until they're 70 years old. If they're successful, they're going to use the regular money. They're going to keep growing that IRA money. So when I take self-directed IRA money from someone, you know, even if they're 60, they might not ever take that money, and it'll be inherited. It'll be given away to their family. So I know that I'm going to have that money for a long time, because they can't go and buy an owner occupied. They can't buy a lot of things with their IRA. They can buy a lot of things with their regular money, but the IRA would be limited on certain things of living your life. If they want to go on vacations and things like that, they're going to use up their regular money, and they might need they might need the regular money back when their kids start to go to college. So there's a lot longer time span having someone's self-directed IRA money, and educate them that they just don't have to be in equities, because from what I see, when people start to hit 60, 65, they actually don't want to be stock market equity anymore. They want that more consistent, safer return being secured to an asset or assets in a fund.
Yeah, totally agree.
And there's just so much money out there in IRA and so little return for the equity markets usually. Not saying you can't make money in the equity markets, but I think you can have that consistent return over a long period of time for your potential person that's going to give you money.
And you're still finding people that don't know that they can self-direct? Is that common?
Go outside of the real estate world. I mean, look, you go, Dave, earlier you said you never were at the real estate meetings. The real estate meetings, all those people want to make a lot of money and they're looking for money.
Yeah,
I never go. Dave, when's the last time you see me at a real estate meeting? 10 never. Years ago?
Yeah.
Never. I go to meetings where it's not real estate based, because I need to educate these people. And it's kind of like you got the blue ocean and the red ocean, right? The red ocean is the real estate meetings where you got a bunch of sharks there. You know, everyone's looking for the same thing. While the blue ocean is going to a meeting where it has nothing to do about real estate.
Like a dental meeting, right, Nathan?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Dental office meeting, you know, a doctor's office meeting, attorney situation that they're just not familiar with at all. Just,
you know, there's with social media, there's so many different groups out there. Just to get into different groups. I go to a men's group here in Florida. So a men's group, there's a CEO's group that I haven't gone yet, but I'm going to go next month. I'm going to go to that group. These guys own all kinds of different companies. I'm going to go tell them what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's not always the real estate meetings that you need involved in. And look, the CEO group will be good for just running my company in itself, right?
Yeah.
And you said earlier too, like, and then those are the kind of people that are looking for that long-term consistent return versus the, I'm going to make $1 million on this.
Yeah.
On this project, you know, or something.
You know, one thing I told you what I want to talk about when we, before the interview started, was the entrepreneur not paying attention to their Roth 401k within their business. And I don't want to hear that you make too much money. It's bullshit. It's not $6,500. You know, me and Kerry get a tremendous amount because we have employees. So you have to educate yourself on how to do that. But man, most entrepreneurs, they dump all their money into their business, which is the most taxable part of their life.
Mm-hmm.
When they sell that property, when they flip that property, even when you hold that property past a year, it's still 20%. I think it's about 22% in tax you got to pay, long-term, short-term capital gains. But one thing that I've done really well with is my 401k.
You sold
Roth
a 401k? Or 401k?
Within my company. Kerry has, she's part of it. There's like five or six of us part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when we play this out, when we're, you know, let's just go with a little scenario. If you play it out to 65 or 70 years old, and let's just say you have $500,000 in there in a Roth 401k when you're 70 years old, and you can make 10% on that. That's mm-hmm. $50,000 a year tax-free mm-hmm. that you can take without touching the principal. And I want everyone to go into a compound interest calculator.
Mm.
I was talking to a 43-year-old the other day. Like, man, I only got like $140,000 in there. Say you only got 70. Say you only got 90. But he had 140. And I said, okay, when do you plan on using it? Which you probably never will. Let's play it out to 70 at a 9% return. And you're going to only add, I think we were adding like 10 or 15 grand. It came out to $1.4 million. Only adding 10 grand a year. And if I educate them at 1.4 million at 10%, that's $140,000 a year tax free.
Yeah.
You can lend money with that. The bulk of the money that I lend to other individuals is through my CAMA self-directed IRA. Yeah. And I charge points, I get security. You know, the question before the show was, you know, part of security. You know, when I lend money, and if you take somebody's money, you got to look at the way commercial banks do it. Like, I'm telling you, I just lent money to my best friend on a deal. It went through the attorney's office, title company, whichever state you're in. It was a first lien position. I do seconds because I don't care. It's all about loan to value and equity after repair value. But it was a first mortgage, got named on the insurance policy, gets recorded at the courthouse. And then I actually made the wife sign, and she's not even in the business. And the reason I did that was because if they own a house together and they're both on the deed and I make them sign personal guarantees, if I only make him sign the personal guarantee, then I can't go after their personal asset up and above the property that I lent on. So if you don't want your wife to sign, then I'm not lending you money.
Hmm.
Right. And you need to learn both sides of it, because I think, you know, I just turned 56 and I'm actually not my apartment buildings, because they're my big tax deductions, but my smaller stuff, you know, my smaller stuff is 2, 3 million, 4 million, but I'm actually selling all my Siesta Key stuff and taking that capital. I might do a 1031 exchange, but probably not. I want to have access to that cash. And then I'm going to be lending that money out. And I'm going to be lending that money out at 3 points, 12%. And you either want the money or you don't.
Is that typically what you're doing a lot now with your money? You're lending it out, or is majority of your money going to apartment complexes? Where is most of the money going?
Never, you know, adapt or die, right? So there, in the apartment building world, there's really nothing that we like that we see that we want to buy. Interest rates have gone up too much.
Yep.
And people, they're starting to get in trouble, but these people with the variable rates 2 years ago, it'll intensify at the end of this year. So I'm doing a lot of lending, a lot.
For rehabs?
Yeah, mostly rehabs, but I do bridge loans too. Guy was selling an apartment building, buying an apartment building. So I lent him a fair amount of money, because he had a purchase before he sold his property. So, lent him the money due to the purchase, and then after he sells, then he'll pay me back. So a lot of bridge loan lending. I just lent a guy, a large amount of money. He was actually finished to rehab. The other hard money lender wanted to be paid back because it went past a year, but I lent him at 50% loan to value. So that'll probably last 5 or 6 months. So a lot of lending for me going on right now. I don't want to do a lot of work. And how much work is there to lend people money? Not a whole lot. Paperwork, attorney, send a wire, get paid at the end of the month.
Absolutely.
And that's what kind of has, as I get to 56 and I start approaching 30, start approaching freaking 60, I will just be one big lender because I want to travel the world. I want freedom.
So,
The real world kind of changes with me, right?
yes. So I wanted to say you've done a lot of memorandums and whatnot. What are some of the key things you've changed that, without getting too detailed, that the first one or second one or third one didn't have that you now put in there? Are you more broad with what you can invest in? Are you doing things differently than you did a couple of years ago with the old memorandums that you would say never do that again and you do something different now?
No, I still have the same securities attorney. It's about that adapting. We started out in the note world, and then we added lending, then we added apartment buildings and mobile home parks. I think one thing, a key point here is I see so many people creating private placement memorandums with their securities attorney that are focused on one asset. It's either non-performing notes, reperforming notes, just apartment buildings. If you look at mine, how I adapted over time, yeah, mine started out in the note world. But today, it's all about full disclosure and risk factors, right? And today, I can lend money. I can buy mobile home parks. I can buy apartment buildings. It's all about disclosures within the risk factors in your private placement memorandum. So I think, and there's some pretty smart guys, I'm not going to piss them off by calling them out, but a bunch of high-level guys I've helped over the past 2 years going, what the hell are you just one asset when I know you do a couple different assets? Put it in there. You just got to disclose and what your risk factors are if things go wrong. And that's key right there to answer your question. It's broadened out of the private placement because last year I bought three apartment buildings, two or three apartment buildings. This year, I haven't bought any. I haven't bought any in a year. But in my private placement memorandum, I'm allowed to lend money for rehabs and bridge loans. Got to put the
Do you
disclosure
need?
in there. But I have options within my private placement memorandum with a lot of people don't do.
Do you need to start off though? Like if you're just getting started out, do you need to have it in one asset class and then later you can expand once you've got a track record, or do you think it matters?
No, I don't think. I think when I talk to people that invest with me, they like just the options. What if I was just apartment buildings and hell went into a handbasket, right? It just went bad. Well, we're all freaking screwed, right? But we do, look, man, we kick ass. And that's partly because we have options within our fund to follow what's going on and what we should do. We can always lend money, right? And no one call me for money. I'm not going to give it to you. So I'm very specific
Uncle
on who I give
Steve.
my money to. And I'm telling you, it takes about a year to get involved with me. It just takes that long. I got to do serious backgrounds on you and follow you and see what you're doing. But anyway, no, I don't. I think you can start out at all what you're. What's the number one thing in real estate that you're going to do? If it's only one thing, okay. But if it's, you want to lend money, maybe the lending money, you just got to learn how to do it because it brings in the revenue. It gives us a consistent cash flow. I lend $1 million, 3 points, 30. I only send out, 970 grand. So I'm already ahead of the game if I do have problems with that. even if I have it structured right. So I'm not sending out a million. I'm only sending out, you know, minus my points and whatever else I have in there, attorney fees or whatever. So if somebody comes to me for $1 million, I'm sending out 970, not a million.
Has it been a deal that you wanted to fund and just couldn't, or for whatever reason didn't?
Yeah, I mean, the main reason is having too much with one person, right? There has to be limitations. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I love my strategic partners, but I'll only go so far with them. So there might be a cap of I only give them 3 or 4 million. I'm not going to go out. I don't think it's good for my investors that I go out and give, you know, one guy 15 or 20 million. The risk factors go up. They've got too many deals going on. You know, I really look, even at the people that I do business with that I've been doing business with a long time, how many deals do they have going on? What can they really happen? You know, one of the things that we just started doing is I make them get insurance policies now. Life insurance. So if they have more than 2.5 million with us, they have to get a life insurance policy in case they kick the bucket and we get paid back to cover the ass of my investors. So we just actually started doing that. And a couple of them were like, I'm not doing that. I'm like, I'm not giving you any more money. It's always, it always turns when you say we're not giving you any more money or we're not doing that. It always turns and they call me back the next day and they'll, we'll do whatever you want. Right.
In your years of doing this, if you look back to your younger self, what would you told your younger self either stop doing or do? What would you be your advice to your 30-year-old Steve?
Man, I can tell you, when I got into the business when I was 36 years old, I've been in this business for 20 years now. You know, I remember when I, the first 2 years, I owned the title company, I owned the construction company, I was in charge of the flipping. You know, we wanted to own everything. Mm-hmm. And I think I talked about that earlier. I don't want to own everything. I want to own what I'm good at. Let the title people make their money. Let the construction people make their money. It's the biggest mistake. And I see it going on to guys that are in the business 2 or 3 years and they want to own everything. They want to own their own construction company. They start doing business for someone else. You know, you're deluding yourself. Do what you're good at. Become an expert at the one thing or two things that you're good at, and you will create massive wealth. And since I say massive wealth, what I did learn from when I got into the business, man, I wanted to make money and be wealthy, you know, in my first 4 or 5 years. And I can tell you this, what you're building in your 30s and your 40s, the gold is in your 50s. I know there's some guys out there that have done really well. It's all perception of what's a lot of money, right? But I think what you're building in your 30s and 40s, it's the time for you to get your ass kicked, right? I got my butt kicked in my late 30s, 40s, and I'm telling you, it was painful. Mm-hmm. But it was weird. When I got to like 50, all those mortgages being paid down, I was able to sell a couple properties and make some good money. I think a problem that I had is I wanted to hold everything. I think it's a good when, you know, sales cures all wounds that you have, right? And I wasn't willing to sell anything in my middle 40s, but I think you should sell off some stuff. You know, the guy that I do business with in Chicago, he goes, man, my money's really tight. How many properties do you have? 60. Sell four. But Uncle Steve, the goal is when I'm six, I'm like, sell for, put $200,000 in your pocket. And guess what? You're not worrying about any money. You must have the cushions and the security blankets to succeed. And the foundation and the culture you create around you is everything. I have my 5 or 6 people, man. There's probably more like 10 that we are tight-knit. We help each other. We help each other through the struggles. There's someone to talk to. You know, it's just so important to, you know, when you are struggling, tell 2 or 3 of your friends that are in the business. Let them give you ideas to get out of your struggles. Mm-hmm. I'm not ashamed to, when I was having problems year before, to go and talk to other people. And look, I've had very successful people come to me. And, you know, what are you going to do? You got to turn this around. This is what you got to let go on. Properties, I'm getting all fired up here. You know, not letting a property go that sucks.
Yeah.
You know, property, a 23 unit in Philadelphia, man, I could not make this thing work. I was losing money every month. I'm Steve Lloyd. I am going to make this work. I am going to turn this around and I am going to make money. Man, Perry's like, will you get over your freaking egotistical bullshit and sell the property? And I took a $100,000 loss and it was the best thing I ever did. Don't try to hold on. I call it the stripper pole with butter on it. You know, you get on that pole, you got butter on it, and you just try to get up the top and you're just not going to make it. Let go.
Good analogy. So what happens if you are somebody in your 50s or 60s who has cash, would like to get into the side of giving money to a PPM or someone like yourself or someone else, right? What would you advise them to do to find that PPM, that person? What would you tell them to do with their capital? How would they make that connection? Or what would you tell them to go look for? I don't know.
Well, they better do their research. You know, you got to dig in. You know, if you have capital and you're looking to deploy it, I mean, things that I do for my investors, they can go on our bank account because I can show them money going in and money going out. Okay. I will show them tax returns. Mm-hmm. I will say, you know, ask for tax returns. You have to go look at their history. What kind of deals have done? Ask around about them, right? You find out a lot, but I see so many people make the mistake. They just meet someone. Someone's a good talker. And they invest with them and then they're screwed 2 or 3 years later. Look, ask for tax returns, ask to go on their bank account, ask them, you know, get information on how their company works, meet the people in their company. And if your gut has any queasiness at all, don't give it to them. Make sure they have a securities attorney, talk to their accountant, talk to their securities account, do your due diligence. Because there's just too many not so great people out there.
Wow.
It's funny. Awesome. When I have somebody, I'll go, hey, you want to go on our bank account? They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, yeah, you want to go on our bank account? I'm going to show you money going in and going out. You want to see our tax return? You know, the tax return's a funny thing because you got a lot of depreciation in there. Mm-hmm. And you're, you know, a lot of stuff we're getting a pref on. And you got to educate them on, say, hey, there's a pref going on here. But we're going to sell three of these apartment buildings, and this is how much equity you have, and this is the money. Because, you know, 2 years we made crazy amount of money. Last mm-hmm. year we still did well, but we didn't make the crazy money last year, right? This year we'll have a good year, but we didn't sell anything last year. So, and it's a good way to create that culture with your investor. Every year we have a holiday party. It's in November. We didn't have it last year. We had it the year before. I had 200 people there. This year we'll have our holiday party. Out of 12 years we've been business, I think we've done 10 of them. We had we missed 2 years of COVID, I think, 9 or 10 we've had. But that's a great thing where all our investors get all to be in one room. It's like what Warren Buffett does at the annual meeting, right? And people go, I'm not having that meeting because I don't want all my investors, you know, all my current investors to meet other people and find other things to invest in. Why not? I don't want one person to have all their money with me. I want to help them succeed about making a good return on their money over time with not just me or a couple other people that I might know. So when I bring those, it's creating a culture and all the investors come in the one room and they can talk and we have dinner. They can ask me questions. They can ask other investor questions and maybe they'll find other places to invest in because nobody wants to have all their eggs in one basket.
Wow.
So it comes to that insecurity, fear thing. Don't help. Look, why am I successful? Why is Kerry successful? We help as many people as we possibly can. Read The Go-Giver. It's one of the first books Dave Van Horn gave me to get that philosophy is help as many people as you possibly can. And I just think success follows you.
So I'm 44. Nathan, you're 46?
46. Be 47 this year.
So we have a few years the 50s hit. And I tell my children and I tell a lot of kids who are younger than me, like mess up in your teens and 20s and 30s. Like just try things. Play with things. Get to the point where you figure out what you're good at, what you're not good at, and see what you learn. Because a lot of things we do, we learn by doing. and failing and succeeding. And I encourage them to try things and whatnot. And I
agree. If you don't think you're going to get your ass kicked, don't even get into the business, because you are getting your ass kicked. But I want you to think about this, guys.
Yeah.
How many years have you been in the business?
13 for me, and Nathan's 15? Been 15.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're going to go with 14. Okay. You've been in this, you're just getting started. 14 years. Think about this. So you're how old? You're 60. How old are you? 60, 50, 40, what?
44
years old. So you basically got in the business when you were 30.
Yep.
Now, how many years from 44 to 70 do you have to go?
16,
right?
Yeah. Yep.
You got so much time, and that's what I'm talking about. These 14 and 15 years, you've built up and learned how to create this success, and you have an amazing foundation to really just kick ass for the next 16, 17 years.
26 years, right? Yeah. You're absolutely right.
I'm off. Yeah. You're getting to my age. 26 more years.
Yeah.
That's amazing what you can do. And that's why I talk about just having a consistent return on your money over a long period of time.
Yeah.
Because if you got a couple $100,000 now, do the compound interest calculator out for 25 years. It's an insanity amount of money. Crazy amount of money.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. It's, I'm really impressed, but man, you're someone I've really respected over the many, many years. If you look for Steve's information, it's in the chat. Please feel free to use a link. You'll get information. I can't promise he'll respond immediately. He has a lot going on. But guys, Steve's big thing is just do it. Just understand, get educated, learn, research, and do it, and ask questions.
Dave, let me just interrupt for a second.
Yes, go ahead.
I can tell you this, just 2 minutes on this. If you've never experienced Tony Robbins, you should. I'm telling you, not going to say the guy changed my life, but the guy added, going to his Date with Destiny and some of his other events, Kerry's a platinum. When I tell you, it has taken Kerry from a really good investor to a whole nother level with Tony Robbins. Now, she's worked her way up. She did platinum last year. And I can tell you, the education, Tony is not about rah-rah. This guy is amazing.
Wow.
Go to Date with Destiny. I took 10 people a year and a half ago.
Yep.
And I can tell you, it took all of them to another level, because that's the belief system that you need, that you can accomplish whatever you want in your life. I highly recommend you get involved. It's well worth it. I think it's 10 grand to go to Date with Destiny. It's brutal, but it's worth it, man.
Is that the one where you step on fire and all that stuff?
No, that's the beginning one. This is, Date with Destiny is intense, man. It's going to mess your mind up. You're going to cry. You're going to yell. You're going to laugh. You're going to meet amazing people there. Okay. But it will definitely, it's about failing and succeeding and having a vision. And, every morning I wake up, it's 10 minutes of gratitude, because we all have it good. I don't care how good you're doing. You still have it better than somebody else.
Hmm.
And then I do, every single morning I look out, where am I going to be in 5 years? Because, now and the next 6 months to a year is already pretty much taken care of. Right.
Yep.
But when you look out 5 years and really where you want to be, it's pretty amazing. You have to plan for 4 or 5 years out. And I think if you plan for it, you look at it every month of your plan, it'll come a couple years earlier.
So before Nathan gets to his last question, I wanted to just make sure that people, respect and understand where Steve's at. Steve, one of the things I appreciate, you're a very humble person. You definitely look like you're sitting in a weird kitchen. One of his prized possessions, I guess his lifelong dream, was to own a boat. And it's awesome to see.
No, you're wrong. No.
I know I am. Sarcastic,
I never owned a boat. I had owned properties on Siesta Key, and I flew down here to check on them. I got here about 5 or 6 days before we went in the lockdown. And I literally had a plane ticket to leave. This is, we'll talk about fear, right? Yeah. Literally had a plane ticket to leave in 10 days. The seventh day we went into COVID lockdown. I knew one person in Sarasota because I wasn't managing the properties. I was just taking them over in the ownership from two other people.
Sure.
And I go in lockdown. I stayed here for like 30 days and I decided that I was never going to go home. I decided to make my life in Sarasota and I didn't know anybody, right? I didn't even know Florida that well. Mm. And literally 6 months later, when the cases came down, I flew home, got up my house, gave it all to Goodwill and drove back in my car and didn't bring anything else except what I could fit in my car. And I started a whole new life. And then 6 months later, I was looking for my dream house on the Intercoastal and I was single at the time. And I didn't want to buy this big house and live in it. I was going to be like depressed. And I saw an ad for the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show and I never owned a boat. I never owned a rowboat, never been in the water world except going to the beach and, you know, North Wildwood, all the crazy bars there.
Yeah, Jersey.
I got my friend, talked to a couple people. They told me I was a complete idiot. And I literally went down. I saw the ad for the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show, drove over with my friend. I went and I bought a boat and I've been living on it for 3 years. Oh, having a boat, another boat built, and it completely changed my life.
That's awesome. Congrats.
Chase the dream, baby.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Go ahead, Nathan. I'll let you end it off.
Yeah. So we always like to check in and see you with our guests. You've been doing this a little while. You've changed things over time and it's all about adapt or die. So then what do you see coming down the pipe? What's the next 12, 24 months look like? For economy notes, what's the best asset class? What are your thoughts?
Good luck. Well, thanks for the toughest question in the world. You know what?
Crystal ball time.
You know what? Don't listen to other people, all the chatter, because I own NVIDIA and it's going insane right now.
Yep.
And 10 people told me to sell at 300 points ago. So look, I actually, you're going to get mad at me and the viewers are going to go, this guy's an idiot. Man, what I buy is what I buy. And I don't look at, I'm going to double tongue myself, but I buy assets and numbers don't lie. Mm-hmm. So I really don't try to figure out what the economy, because if you listen to all these people, we were going in a recession, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We were supposed to get out of the stock market 6 months ago, right? That would have cost me 300 grand. I think I'm up 300 grand or some crazy shit. So just have your vision of being consistent. A deal is a deal. The numbers either work or they don't. So the apartment building numbers haven't worked. So we just haven't bought. But For me, it's about lending out capital, preparing for when the apartment buildings come available. And now we're kind of in a phase where I think I own 12 apartment buildings over 40 million. One, it's just crazy, man. I own one that's 140 million with 980 units. It's hard to believe that I'm a part of this stuff. But now it's gotten into, I hope the vision is to buy two next year and sell two. The next year, buy two, sell two. So, you know, I want to keep rotating these apartment buildings, but I also want to bring cash in so we're not equity rich and cash poor. If I can get anything through your mind, don't go cash poor. It's too much stress.
Do you think that real estate values are going to change much? Do you think interest rates, where's your crystal ball on those kind of things?
Okay, look, I think it's all going to be consistent around where everything it is. If I could answer that question, I'm sorry to disappoint you.
No, none of us know.
I think we're in a time. One thing I don't like what happened over the past couple years is we had this massive doubling in real estate and we really didn't see that other side of it come down hard. That's the only thing that kind of, I see it stabilizing.
Yes.
I see it coming down a little bit, but I never saw in the stock market or in the real estate of this doubling of everything and really not having a severe pullback. There's always got to be a yin and yang, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I really didn't see a sell-off in the apartment building. I think inventory, depends where you are in the country, Florida inventory is building up like crazy. But I hear in the Northeast that there's not a whole lot of inventory, but just make sound good deals. That's what we do. You know, if most people that meet with me, they go, you haven't bought an apartment building in over 14 months. No, I haven't. You can't force things to work.
Yeah. What,
Dave, you said something earlier that was really important. Keep it simple.
Yeah.
I truly, as much success as we have, I really keep it simple and trust your gut and build upon your assets, because they will grow into something amazing. When somebody comes to me with a deal and they go, we got to do this, 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 and this, I'm like, holy shit, I'm out. That end part is I'm out. It's not that hard. It's about being consistent with structure, having the right people in your circle, and building a culture.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
Yeah. Well, Steve, awesome. It's been an awesome time with you. We're going to disconnect live from the public and have some after hours with you for a few minutes. But thank you very much for coming on, sharing your knowledge, experience, and being real, which I know you always are. But thank you for coming on the show for today.
Well, yeah. I wish you guys great success. If you ever need anything, I really try to help as many people as I possibly can.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Awesome.
Follow my best life. We're headed for the Bahamas for 2 months and a month and a half. If you're down in the Abacos, stop in and visit me.